Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Brewing podcast and a return to the subject matter of Brexit, of course. But the focus for sure will be on what this may mean for UK investors. But before you can consume this original content, please first listen to our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Brewin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Brewing podcast, and there really is nowhere else to go this week other than to discuss Brexit and the investment implications for markets. To do this, we welcome back from his summer holiday our head of research, Guy Foster. You've been in Ireland, I understand. Is that on a holiday or are you searching
just
out alternative
border arrangements?
To check out border arrangements. Although, in fact, I have to say, I know you are on holiday. I think you told me that the weather was so disappointing that you had to keep your trousers on the whole time. And I have a lot of sympathy.
As opposed to shorts, yes.
Yeah, right, okay. Well, that really could have made for a disappointing holiday. And also delighted to welcome our exciting new hire, our head of multi-asset strategy, Paul Dannis. Paul, how are you? Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, hi everyone. So I'm in my fourth week now at Brewin. Really happy to be here. I guess my last role was with BCA Research, who we've got a fairly close relationship with, so that's great. And happy and looking forward to just being on board.
Great. Well, good to have you on board. And that's a funny accent. What is that? Is that German?
Canadian,
Russian?
Canadian.
Canadian. Interesting. Right. Okay. Well, let's get on to the matter in hand. And of course, there is a lot of excitement and controversy around the move that our Prime Minister has made. We'll start with you, Guy, to talk about the politics, and we'll move on to investments with Paul. But no doubt it'll be an interactive conversation. I guess what we want to lay out, the extent you think this is a controversial move and what the motivations are, what it is and perhaps what it isn't.
Obviously a controversial move. Yeah. And I think what it's easy to see this in terms of the context in which proroguing was discussed, say, during the leadership campaign. And that was with the idea being that it would be to force through a no deal Brexit. By preventing Parliament from meeting to prevent a no-deal Brexit. Now, what's distinct about the move that the Prime Minister has made is that he's left a little gap at the end. And so that is...
And the start.
And at the start, true. So but that gap at the end, in particular, is an opportunity still to try and pass something to prevent him from taking the UK out without a deal. But it also, it's there in order to try and get a deal through. So this is not him seeking a no-deal Brexit. This is him continuing with the strategy, the negotiation strategy that we've talked about before on the podcast and in letters to clients, which is that you just have to seem willing to go for a no-deal Brexit in order to get the concessions, most specifically on the backstop, that you need in order to get a deal that would pass through the House of Commons and through Parliament and be satisfactory. So it's not he's not seeking a no deal Brexit. He's just making it a credible threat.
Okay, but we've seen quite a vociferous response from not only the electorate but clearly from quarters of Parliament, and it seems as though the two options that are being discussed are some sort of legislation to prevent Johnson from pursuing this strategy, raising the prospect of no deal, and potentially a vote of no confidence if the legislation isn't successful. I mean, you don't profess to be a constitutional expert guy, but you're pretty good on this. What is the probability of a legislation passes, and what is the risk associated with that strategy from Parliament?
So the kind of legislation that is being discussed is legislation that would require the Prime Minister to request an extension, a further extension. It would need to be stronger than the legislation that was employed when the previous Prime Minister was approaching the Brexit deadline, because that was just an instruction by Parliament rather than a law, and effectively she could have just ignored it if she really wanted to. So it would need to be stronger than that, because I mean we don't know for sure, but the messaging aspect of what Boris Johnson has done here is to say, I don't mind defying convention, you know. And in fact, he said that during the leadership campaign, that he wouldn't rule anything out. He won't break the law, he said, but he doesn't mind breaching parliamentary convention in order to make sure that the UK leaves on the 31st of October. So whatever it is, it needs to be stronger than the tools that were employed against Prime Minister May's Brexit ambitions, because Boris Johnson's clearly going to be less cooperative with the spirit of that legislation. Now, thereafter is a real open question. Obviously, we don't know what the instruction would be, but if there's an instruction to the Prime Minister to request an extension, then it needs to be totally watertight so that he can't request an extension in a way that somehow forces the EU's hands to... such that they can't really accept it. So, you know, if he asks for it on the basis that they want a 6-month extension during which time the UK will be as obstructive as possible, then maybe it's difficult for the EU to accept that request for an extension. Or maybe he can, you know, request it tying in some other, even less, some conditions which they are completely unable to meet.
So you can imagine, no matter the letter of the law or the instruction, he would deliver it in a way, working with his partner Cummings, that didn't wholly satisfy the EU negotiators that they were sort of compelled to accept. You know, we want to make it as difficult as possible for the EU to accept.
Well, I think that's the point, is that the legislation, if it can be passed, and I think that's a massive if, would need to be so tight that it forces him to deliver it in a way that averts a no-deal Brexit. And I find it difficult to imagine that's possible, to be totally frank.
Okay. Well, Paul, maybe I'll sort of bring you in here. I'd just be interested to know, I mean, people are pretty familiar with how Sterling reacts to sort of various news flow. Has that sort of pattern continued? How are you seeing the popularity of Sterling at this current juncture?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Sterling continues to trade primarily around Brexit developments, and I think looking ahead, I mean, assuming these legal challenges against prorogation are not successful, and John Major has already spoken out and said that he would seek to challenge prorogation. Gina Miller, the prominent anti-Brexit campaigner, has already initiated in the High Court a legal challenge against prorogation. But assuming that doesn't work, and assuming MPs are not able to insert legislation that effectively prevents the UK from crashing out of the EU without a deal, you're sort of left with, I think, three options. The best option for Sterling would be to see the UK and or the EU compromise on the Irish backstop, and then the UK to leave the EU on October 31st or shortly after with a deal. That would be a very good backdrop for Sterling, especially against this backdrop of very negative positioning on Sterling. Looking at the futures and options market, speculators are heavily net short. And also considering Sterling is cheap on most metrics.
I mean, just on that sort of net short position.
Yeah.
I mean, to what extent, might be the listener's assumption that everyone's hated Sterling for a long time. Are we at an extreme position on that short, or is it just marginal?
Yeah. We're at an extreme. We're at an extreme. Okay. So if you look at a chart of sterling versus the dollar and net speculative positions, long versus short, on around a 15-year time horizon, it's close to the an extreme in terms of net short positions. Yeah. So, I mean, that would be an ideal situation to see the UK leave with the deal, given how oversold sterling is and given that it is cheap on PPP. You could get a fairly decent rally on that, on the back of that. But we have a hard time, I think, still attaching high odds to that outcome, despite the fact that there has been, I think, more dialogue between the UK and the EU of late. The other options are that the UK crashes out without a deal, which is clearly a negative backdrop for sterling, given the negative impact that we would see on the economy.
I mean, some commentators say, well, look, it's priced in now. Just look how weak sterling has been. We must be at or around a floor.
Yeah.
Do you have much sympathy with that view?
We looked at this today, and based on the betting markets, and that's not necessarily a true read of markets' expectations for the odds of the UK crashing out without a deal, but the betting markets currently say around 42% chance.
Yeah.
So that's just one way of looking at it. But
suggesting it's not priced in, there is a lot of people who would be surprised by it.
Yeah.
And therefore sterling could be sold even further. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess expectations of the UK leaving the EU without a deal have been going up all year, but you're still under that 50% threshold.
Yeah.
So I think, no deal is obviously a bad backdrop for sterling. And then the other option, sort of the Brexit, is deferred again. You could get a knee-jerk positive reaction in sterling if you kind of get closer to the October 31st date, fears of no deal rise, sterling sells off, and that doesn't happen because it eventually gets deferred.
Yeah.
You could see a knee-jerk positive reaction in sterling, but I think once the market sort of digests the fact that there's going to be uncertainty around new elections and the potential of a government that sees hard left Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn have some sort of position in, you could see sterling decline anew. And I mean, there's no guarantee that if there was new elections that political parties would be able to form a government, and there might have to be another election after that. So there's just a lot of uncertainty.
Your prior here is that it would be very difficult to have a conclusive election.
Yes.
So you'd be very likely to have an election, and quite unlikely for it to provide a market-friendly outcome.
Yeah, yeah. So we just see a lot of uncertainty with regards to the outlook for Brexit and sterling, despite the fact that the odds of getting a deal look like they've probably marginally gone up. I still think from a risk reward standpoint.
Maybe bring Guy in, or if you want to take this, why have the odds of a deal gone up, given that this narrative, these efforts do seem to elevate the threat of no deal?
Because by making the threat of no deal more credible, it's more likely that you get a concession from the EU, and that was always the strategy.
To sharpen the minds of on the EU side, this threat of no deal.
Yeah, I mean, because the requirement, I mean, the main sticking point is the backstop. The backstop is to prevent a hard border, and if you end up with a no deal Brexit, then you get that hard border where it needs to be built, and it needs to be built very quickly. Whereas under any kind of deal, even one without a backstop, you at least have a transition period before that's necessary, in order to then strike a deal which may mean that you don't need a backstop anyway. So the whole point of Boris Johnson's strategy is to make it seem like the thing that you most want, that he most wants to avoid, he's going to make happen really, really quickly. He's going to make it worse if they don't meet him halfway on this point. The strategy seems to be working a bit, right? I mean, we obviously don't know. The two things we don't know are whether he's bluffing or whether he's serious about it, about being prepared to go with no deal. And we don't know whether the EU negotiators believe that he's serious or not.
Okay. I mean, I would sort of come back to this other potential avenue to usurp Johnson, and that is this vote of no confidence.
Yeah.
Considered by some as the nuclear option. I mean, how bulletproof a method is that to preventing a no deal? I don't know if you sort of want to walk us through some scenario analysis here.
So again, the proroguing strategy makes it more difficult for a no confidence vote to happen, because it now needs to happen within the next few days rather than and the challenge that the anti no deal Brexit faction have had is that they are representative of a great many different parties, a very broad church with no one clear leader, and most obviously, if you bring down the government, you need to replace it with another government if you actually want to change, you know, and that's essential because you need to change this, the withdrawal agreement, which otherwise means that we're going out with or without a deal on the 31st yeah. of October. To replace it with a government, you need that government to be formed of some people, and you need it to have a leader. Who would the leader be? Jeremy Corbyn thinks it should be him. Almost everyone else thinks it should be almost anybody else. But he controls the largest part of the anti-Brexit faction. And there are, you know, a plethora of other splits within each of those different factions. So it just seems really difficult to see how they can get themselves organised and find some common ground in order to cause a no confidence vote, or at least in order to have anything
successful, one that leads the government to national unity.
Yeah, if you have, I mean, and we should not use the expression government of national unity. I think at a time when the country is 52% to 48% split on this particular topic, government of national unity is the one thing that simply cannot happen under these circumstances in particular. So under the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, if they did manage to get a vote of no confidence through, then there's a 2-week period in which the government can try and win back confidence, or potentially another government can be formed. But given it's never happened before, it's not quite clear exactly how that part of the process would work. So the way the legislation is written, it would be what is clear is that the Prime Minister would have 2 weeks. He could choose not to resign during that period of time. He could try and reclaim the confidence of the House. Obviously, if that happens, once Parliament comes back after the proroguing, 2 weeks, by 2 weeks after that, we're out of the EU. So, you know, it's too late by then.
And I guess if the vote of no confidence doesn't result in support for any leader, then you have a general election.
General election
that Boris could set after.
It would be very unusual to have a general election less than 6 weeks after it was called. And the convention is that you can't change policy significantly during that time. And so the existing Queen's speech, the policy of leaving the EU, that would all be in place. So effectively, it would make it harder to change government policy on leaving the EU if you were in a period approaching a general election.
Okay, so coming back to you, Paul, then, thinking about our investment conclusions, I'll let you articulate why, but it's probably we're going to be coming up with sort of a cautious net outcome here, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, adding up the scenarios, you know, it just seems like risk-reward is tilted to the downside for sterling. I think, you know, in the longer term, just given that value, looking at PPP and looking at how negative the market is, and you generally would want to lean against the crowd in markets, you know, sterling probably will be higher on a longer term view. It just doesn't seem like there's that visibility where you would want to make a bullish bet on sterling at this juncture, given that kind of looking at all the scenarios, the bulk of them point to a negative kind of outlook for sterling at this point.
Okay, so I guess we better sort of conclude on that. I don't want to necessarily play a game of what do you think is going to happen, but we could go around the table here. But it's a very complicated set of route to any outcome, and presumably have a relatively low conviction view on what's going to happen. But what is our sort of probability analysis at the moment?
Well, I mean, it's a bit like when we discussed this before. Effectively, the trends have continued in the same direction, which was at the time the most likely thing was that you ended up with a deferral of Brexit, but the risks of no deal were going up, and because the risks of no deal were going up, that was pushing up the possibility of getting a deal as well. And essentially, this just takes that to another level, you know, that the game of chicken is intensifying, the ways of avoiding it are reducing. And so, you know, given the odds that Paul quoted earlier, the sort of 40% betting markets opinion that prospect of a no deal Brexit probably mirrored to some extent by the chances of a successful deal being concluded, with the balance being made up of a deferral. But that deferral chance, as we said, just continues to go down as the Prime Minister and Downing Street articulate so far quite successfully their negotiation strategy.
And also, do we have to sort of bear in mind that perhaps no deal, there's a range of no deals? Perhaps we'll talk about that more nearer the deadline, but there could be sort of a managed no deal. There's sort of talks of separate contracts for aviation and security and certain tradable goods.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's going to try and do what they can to reduce the
disruption.
The disruption, yeah. Exactly. And I think, regardless of your political opinions, the minister in charge of making those preparations have probably got the most competent doer within the cabinet in Michael Gove, actually trying to make sure that disruption is minimised. And specifically, he was, in Theresa May's cabinet, the Brexiteer who was most concerned about no Brexit. So he's highly motivated and highly capable in terms of minimising that disruption as much as possible.
Okay, well, great. Thanks, Guy. And thank you, Paul. Great to have you on the podcast. Perhaps a little bit too much airtime for Guy, you suspect, on this, your first effort. But no doubt we'll bring you, give you a bit more of a show.
I thought it was too much airtime for Ben. it's a common theme, yeah?
Right, okay. Well, perhaps we'll redistribute evenly between us all next time. To our listeners, thanks very much for listening. Do let us know what you think on Twitter, referencing hashtag Brewing Podcast, or leave a review on iTunes or SoundCloud. But until next time, many thanks for listening. Thank you.